Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Tick, 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 tick. 1, 2, 3, boom. Welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, to my favorite podcast, your favorite podcast, everybody's favorite podcast. It is Meltdown Monday already. It is hot. It is humid. It is currently sat on the edge of a lightning bolt, ready to skid out of that cloud. Yes, I am talking about the fire that is the Meltdown. As always, I am your host, with the most, with a little bit of black and white zebra drip on this Monday. And if you're thinking about, well, who could the guest be? Think about who is the world's greatest referee, and you'll find our guest for episode number 15 here on The Meltdown. It's been an amazing week here in Manchester, UK, as I'm sure it has over the pond. So right now, ladies and gentlemen, sit on the edge of your seat and get yourselves prepared, because I know your heart is beating just a little bit faster than it was before, because the man, the myth, the legend that we have the pleasure of being with each and every week is ready to take you on a little destructive path. He's the creation of devastation, and I'm proud to call him my tag team partner. He's the 3-time tag team champion of the world. It's Brian Clark!
And he is the 3-time UK host of the year and Guinness World Record holder. He is the Tomcat of Manchester. As always, Tom, thank you for that great intro, my friend. You know, we are dripping in that internet gold, and we are ready for episode 15. But I got to ask, Tomcat, how goes it this fine afternoon in Manchester?
I tell you what, brother. So this week, we have hit a culmination of about 3 weeks worth of really good weather. And I mean, like, American style really good weather. It's been like 90 plus degrees a day. But today, the clouds came over. And did they come over? And when they exploded, boom, it has drenched the entire plains of Manchester. But we needed it. We needed that little release. So I felt that in the air. But it has been busy, busy, man. I've just been getting everything prepped, because my daughter, I'm going to send this out to Sophia. My beautiful daughter, Sophia, she's 10 years old. She is going to be shooting a TV series called Girl Guides versus Aliens tomorrow in Liverpool. And that just had me thinking about our guest that we had on last week, our wonderful compadre, Ray Glacier Lloyd, who was promoting his wonderful movie, which was Wrestlers versus Aliens, right? So yeah. My real question to myself was, Who's going to go over more? Is it going to be Stan Hansen, Glacier, Meng, and Ernest the Cat Miller? Or is it going to be a 10-year-old little girl when she finds out that the restaurant that we've taken her to doesn't serve chicken tenders? Because I don't want to be anywhere around her when that happens. It's like hell is unleashed. So good luck, Sophia. You're going to absolutely... What's the phrase? Break a leg, honey. Break a leg tomorrow in Liverpool. We're going to do it. How's your week been, man? All good?
Oh, man. Yeah. By the way, congrats, Sophia. That is awesome. And Tom will make sure those chicken fingers will be served. No doubt about that. Listen, it's been a huge week in pro wrestling, including Goldberg's final match, his retirement match on Saturday night main event, yep. where one of our previous guests, Ernest the Cat Miller, walked Goldberg to the ring, you know? So yeah, we had the Great American Bash. And then, of course, AEW All In, which was in Arlington, Texas, another huge show. And last week we had Glacier fill us in on all the happenings for AEW. So that it's a great tie-in, a lot of stuff going on. But when we here at the Meltdown, we talk about being international. We have Germany, Canada, Japan, and next week, or very soon, Mexico is just around the corner. We are international. Listen, the Meltdown has no problem going off the top rope and into that high rent district. And our special guest today is a legendary referee in the Mid-Atlantic territory, the Crockett territory, WWF, WWE, TNA, and AEW. He is a TNA Hall of Fame member with over 40 plus years in the professional wrestling business. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Meltdown. One of the greatest to ever do it, senior referee, Mr. Earl Hebner. Woo! Come on in, my man.
Welcome, right. Baby Earl.
Yes.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
We are good, man. Glad to have you with us. Got those tech issues squared away, and we have been looking forward to this for the last few weeks. We talked about having you on the show, man. And again, absolute legend, the greatest of all time.
If you don't believe him, he's got it written on his shirt, Brian.
Exactly. I mean, look right there. There's the proof.
Hey, but you know what? When I got the information about what was going on, and you know, I've been in a hell of a lot of main events, but when I found out it was you and Tom, brother, that was a main event for me. Another one.
All right.
You know it. The check's in the post.
All right.
You're an absolute legend. Thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful Meltdown Monday. We are going to take you to task. We have got so many questions. Honestly, we could do a full series just on Earl Hebner. So let's bat it over to the bomb shelter over there in AZ. And Brian, kick us off on this beautiful Monday.
Well, it's cooking. This show's going to be cooking because it's what, 110 today at Tucson, Arizona? That's just what we do. I mean, we're used to that dry heat. I know Earl's been getting a lot of rain. We chit-chatted a little bit before we kicked the show off. And one thing about Earl, and it still holds true today, he was always in a good mood. I mean, I don't ever remember Earl blowing up on the road or cracking or any of that. He was always laughing, always funny, and still holds true today. So, Earl, man, again, we're glad we have you with us today, and we're going to take a little bit of a dive into you. I don't know if we'll take a deep dive, but we're going to hit you with some questions here on the Meltdown. The first one, obviously, a lot of people, and you've covered this in other areas, but we want to ask you here on the Meltdown. Tell us how you – I have an idea, and I've researched this. So tell us how you got into the pro wrestling business.
Well, you know, years ago, I was putting a ring up for the NWA, Jim Crockett, and – a referee named Angelo Martinelli had a heart attack and passed away on the way to the show. And then Mr. Murnick walked in and he goes, Earl, I need you to do me a favor. I said, what's that? He said, I need you to referee. I said, Mr. Murnick, hell, I don't know how to referee. He said, all you got to do is listen. I said, okay. So I tried it and, you know, I was green as grass, but it worked. You know, filled the spot for the night. And then he got He said, well, heck, let me try you again. And he tried me again. And he said, well, I think I want to use you around south down here. I said, okay. Because I was holding the ring and selling the merchandise and doing all that. So everything just fit right in. It's like he's getting 3 for 1. And it worked out. So, you know, that's basically how I got going in it, in the business.
That's all right. Awesome. Yeah.
How old were you at this stage? Oh, sorry, Brian. How old were you?
I was about maybe 24, 25 back then when I first started in putting the ring up. Okay.
So you did merchandise. You were doing merchandise, setting up the ring, referee. So a little bit of everything,
all
those parts are, you got to have every.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Area you're just talking about to make the business a go. When you first started, did you think that it would end up being a full-time career for you?
Not really. No. And Adam, it's like being in the right place at the right time. And that's how it worked.
Timing is everything. You know, that's true. It's so true. It happens. I saw so many guys get their breaks. So, yeah.
So what year was this, Earl? Just so I've got a bit of a timeline. I'll work a little bit forward. What year did you get broken in?
It's a, I'm trying to think,
70s. Oh, okay. So when it comes to late 70s, you're setting up the ring, you're doing the merch. Were you smart to the business at this particular time, or was it still very, very shielded, very much kayfabe? Or were you in the inner circle, as it were?
I was kind of smart.
Okay.
Until I started refereeing. You know, I had an idea, but I wasn't for sure. I couldn't say for sure if it was or won't, and I never did anyway. But I just, you know, always had in my mind, what are these guys doing, and things like that. And it made me think, but I never exposed it. Never. No. Nobody. What I seen and what I knew, I kept to myself.
Hey, it's the best way. It's the best way. Say that to my wife all the time. Just keeping to myself. Oh, I love it. Well, you have had such an illustrious career. And from that break-in moment, you went from strength to strength to strength to strength, working alongside your brother. And speaking of your brother, I wanted to touch base on one of the biggest angles as you made your way into the WWF. It was one of the biggest storylines in history. It was the evil twin referee. Let's have a little chat about that and how you got to that particular moment in time.
Well, you know, my brother was working up there way, way before I was, because I stayed with Crockett, but they didn't need me then. And my brother called me up one day and he says, hey, man, they're thinking about doing a deal with us. I go, what do you mean? He go, well, we want to take the belt off of Hogan, but they don't want to beat him fair and square because he's going to go movies and he's going to come back.
Right.
And I said, I told Hogan that I had a twin brother and it worked perfect. And he said, what do you think? I said, I don't know. Cause I didn't know then, working for Crockett, I was real loyalty to them, and it's hard leaving somebody that's good to you. And, in this business, So Vince flew us up to Connecticut, and we sit down and we talked about it. And then he goes, okay. So I said, okay, I'll do it, because it was more money and everything else. And I said, okay, I'll do it. So he says, okay. So he leaves, and the secretary comes back, and she's got an envelope. And she said, this is, Vince says, this is you and Dave's envelope for the, coming up and taking your time. So you, now I'm going, okay. And I'm going, and I go, he looks at me, I look at him. I go, I'm ready. I'm ready for the job. There's no hesitation now. Hell, I just made more there than Crockett paid me all year. what am I waiting on?
What a great story, man. That's awesome.
So then after that, we flew up to Connecticut. We stayed up there for about 3 days, 4 days. We go over this and go over that in the warehouse, in the ring, this, that, and the other. And then we take a little break, come back, and we got it all straight. So the day of the show, we flew up there to Indianapolis, and it was all kayfabe, okay? So they took me to the villain, and I walked in, and everybody's going, hey, Dave, hey, Dave. I go, hey, guys. Kept walking straight to Vince's office. You know, nobody knew that it was me.
Wow.
And I stayed in Vince's office all day long. Then later Dave comes in, but hell, they'd seen me, so they really didn't know the difference. And they just figured it was one Dave. And till showtime, nobody knew I was there till I went to the ring.
That's amazing.
It's about a handful of people that were at the warehouse going over this thing. But as far as anybody else, it was, I mean, really, truly, that's the biggest kayfabe thing that ever happened, as far as I'm concerned, in wrestling that never got out.
Agree completely. I mean, you look at it from a basis of significance in professional wrestling history, and it is a big pivotal moment. What were the boys' reaction backstage? So you've done the angle, you've shot everything, and the main event has gone off the air. You've gone back through the curtain. What's the boys' reaction?
They were in shock. they couldn't believe it. They just couldn't believe it, you know. And hardly any of them, I don't think the way it was accepted, that they didn't even know we were twins, that we had that Dave had a twin brother. That's how shocking it was, man.
That's and crazy. Me, that in all the years that he's worked there, he's not mentioned he's got a twin brother.
right. Up until the angle.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, when I was walking to the ring and just to look around, working for Crockett, you had 2,000 or 3,000, but not like that. And brother, I was nervous as you know what. I've never seen a crowd that big, you know. And I'm walking to the ring and I'm looking, and they're going, Hebner, Hebner. And I'm thinking, okay, I want you to chant Hebner at about 20 minutes from now. And you know what? After all the match, I was so nervous. Really, believe me, I was nervous. I kicked David so hard that I knocked myself down. If you ever go back and look, I took a bump on my own. I thought I broke his ribs. The punch wasn't too bad, but the kick, brother, I was, man, I thought I was kicking a football 200 yards. Nervous.
Well, you did it amazing. I watched that again last night, just so you know. You know, I'm doing all my research, and I'd watched it way back in the day, but I watched it last night, and you did, man. The buildup between the whole match when you guys were faced off against each other, and the whole buildup. I mean, and like you said, when you walked out to that crowd, you could see not just rows of seats, but levels and layers of people. and it was packed. You guys had so much heat going into that. And again, you, when you said you kicked him, you did take a bump. You kicked him so hard.
Oh, that, I've got to say as well, I've never seen a referee fly like you did out of Hogan's hands over that top rope. My Lord.
Okay, let me tell you this now. We're at the warehouse, right? We're practicing. Hogan's got me up just like he did there. And he said, I'm just going to walk you to the ropes and toss you to them. And I said, okay. And when he picked me up, he started running, and I'm thinking, this ain't the program here, brother. This is not what we went through. And I knew, I said, oh my God, there's no way he's going to hand me to them like he said he was. And when he launched me, you know, I went over Andre, DiBiase, yes, Virgil, and everybody. And I spun the rotor cup once I hit the floor. I spun the rotor cup in my arm. But I was so hyped up then, excited and whatever you want to call it. It never bothered me. Then the next day, when I was coming home, I was on a plane and I was moving an arm. I go, God, I can't hardly move this thing. And then I called Vince and told him, I said, I think my arm's messed up and from the floor. Because after the show, hell, we drank so much beer that it was no pain anyway, you know. We were celebrating. And so anyway, made a long story short, I went to.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Dr. Andrews in Alabama to be checked out, and I splintered a rotator cuff. So came home, and about 2 or 3 days later, he scheduled me for a surgery. I went down there and had surgery on it. So my first day there, then come home, and I'm home eight to 10 weeks doing rehab.
Well, like I said, I watched it last night, and when he threw you so far and so hard that you went over everybody that was supposed to help break your fall, you went over those guys.
Over.
Yeah. I was like, where the hell did he go? And you went flying, man. And you, like you said, he didn't walk and then give you the shot. He went like a run.
He was jogging.
Yes, sir.
What's our favorite line, Brian? This referee, it don't work for me, brother.
Yeah, that was it. I was like, okay, these guys, does he have some heat? Does he owe him some money? Or what's the deal? Let me ask you this, Earl. What were your first impressions when you met with Vince? And did you see a lot of changes throughout the years? Or did he always sort of remain the same guy when you first met him and going forward?
You know, he was a great guy all up until they went public. That's when the change came. He was a great guy, but when they did that, it seemed like an entirely different person then.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that. That was around, what, 2000, yeah. 2001 time, wasn't it? Yep. I mean, you can seriously see, even from a television perspective, you can probably see it a lot more. The chip that was definitely on a certain McMahon's shoulder. But from a family aspect, I want to talk about you and your ability to now work with your brother Dave. How was that? That must have been an incredible journey to be able to be working with your twin now, be in the same company. Obviously, you were on two different sides of the fence. You working with the NWA and him in the WWE. WWF. What was it like being able to travel the roads with Dave?
It was great. It was great. I mean, we probably spent 30 years together.
How nice is that, right?
And it's, and it's kind of, it's been kind of tough since he passed away, but time has made it better. But it's like I said, I totally, when I was at the funeral, I said, it's like we've been married for 30 years and never divorced. And I said, it's going to be hard for a while, but God will take care of it. But it was, you know, when you travel somebody day and night for that long, and then they're not there no more, you miss them, especially twins.
Especially twins. Well, as we do on this show, we like to honor fallen heroes. So as tributes, this show goes out to the legend that is Dave Hebner. Upstairs for you, big brother. There we go. Take a swig for the working man. Beautiful. It was so nice that you got to be able to share that time, though. Imagine that, 30 years. If you hadn't been working together, how much time would you have spent together? So those memories must be amazing. Yeah. Were there any times where there was any creative differences between the two of you? Was there any fighting brother instances over 30 years? Now you're smiling, so I know for a fact that there was. Let's have a chat about that.
We I wish I could remember the town we're in, but I don't know. He was, you know, he turned into be an agent, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One day something happened. I don't know. He jumped on me at the building and something. And I don't know. We had it out and we were getting ready to fight. And I can't remember. Somebody stepped in and broke us up. Oh, we were just cussing each other out and everything. I mean, like a match, you know.
That's awesome.
And finally, I think Slaughter stepped in and broke it up. And then I felt bad afterwards, and he felt bad as the day went on. And, you know, but we only had one run in. But actually, like, he was the agent. He was the boss, you know. And I was like, don't tell me what to do, you know. But it, I don't know, you know. I'm hot-headed at times, too.
That's not bad, though, is it? Over 30 years, Brian, one fight after 30 years. I've had at least three with my wife today.
Well, I think that's really, really good record there, Earl. I mean, like I said earlier in the show, that you always seem so upbeat and positive and just fun to be around. I mean, like, I've got some photos of that we'll share here on this. Actually, a picture of us in Europe on one of the trips, a picture of you and Yoko and Billy Gunn, all on the back of the bus, just having a good time, you know. So that's how I remember you. And speaking of Europe in those early to mid-90s, I would say, do you remember how bad it was as far as the American house shows in the mid-90s? I think you were there. I know you remember, but the house show attendance in the States was really down. And seeing as how we have such a global audience, so they would get this, was that, did you look forward to working the international shows? Because there's such a big difference in the U.S. and the U.K. shows. Did you enjoy going to Europe and anywhere international?
Loved it. Loved it. It's just that the people are different.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes over here, they see more of it. And I think they like it, but they take it for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Over there, it's people like you and myself and great superstars that they see on TV and they want to meet them so bad. So, and we don't, and the reason I think we do great business over there is because we don't burn it out.
Good point.
And when we get there, it's something to look forward to. But like running house shows in the States here, you run a house show here this month, that month, that month, that month, and then you have a big pay-per-view. So the people get to see everybody 10 times more than they get to see us. But when we get there, they're appreciated and of us, and they want to see us, you know?
Yeah, it's just great. I agree. It's that big difference of the crowd reaction and the dynamics of working in front of anywhere in the UK, Europe, international. I mean, I remember going to Rome and Milan, Philippines, Singapore, and those fans were just so into it. And it was always fun. And of course, the payoff difference as far as versus the US, UK was, you know,
yeah,
big difference.
But you know, like, you know, like, hell, we've been everywhere in the world, you know, but for some reason, I love all the international food. I love it. They just, it's always tastes different. Some people, some of my guys don't like it, but hell, I could eat it all day long, you know, especially England.
Oh, well, UK, it's all there for you, mate. It's all there ready for you.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I mean, man, it was great. I think the best two places, I mean, everything was good, don't get me wrong, but Manchester and Wembley had the best food.
Thanks for the rub. I'll send you that money that I owe you. That's two checks for Mr. Earl Hebner that I'm going to put in the post.
No, just send me some food. Send me a big plate when I get there.
Nice big plate of fish and chips ready for you. I'll bring you some black pudding. Have you had black pudding?
Can't remember.
Right, I'm going to bring you a full berry black pudding. It's like a Scottish haggis, but it's wrapped in a really tight black, like a sheep's intestine. Yeah, you're going to love that.
I've eaten everything they made over there.
I was just trying to think of the worst thing that I could really bring, girl. I can't wait. We love black pudding. Right, talk to us. We're going to get back on it. I'm going to get back on track. So talk to us a little bit about a day in a standard day in the life of a referee. So we're going to TV, Monday Night Raw. What would your tasks be during the day? What would a typical referee do during the day before the camera is turned on?
Well, I'm talking about me, not the rest of them.
Because you're the world's greatest, brother.
Well, if I am, it's because I wanted to be the best, always. Only one guy in the world is better than me. It's Tommy Young. I worked underneath of him, and I watched him, and he helped me so much, believe me. But the thing is that if you want to be good, like TVs, the minute you finish some eating and you see your match in the ring, you go to the ring. It's not a vacation. Mm-hmm. Have the interest to know what's going on, not just to finish. I mean, I wanted to know everything from bell to bell, and that's how I did it. I went to the ring. I wanted to know the spots, the heat spots, the comeback spots, and every match that I had. You know, so I wouldn't get caught looking stupid. You know, if you're going to have a ball shot, I want to know. Because if I see it, I got to ring the bell. So tell me, don't hide the crap from me. Let me know, and I can help you get your shit done. You know, without burying you and me. And that's how I did. And back then, most of the refs would go to the ring and learn. Now these days we're in now, I think they, I don't think they have the ambition that I had. All the Joey Marilla, Nick Patrick, all the old guys. You know,
absolute legends of the sport. Absolute right. Legends. And we're going to run through a big list of them a little bit later on, because we're going to put Earl under the microscope as we play our game of Winner Stays On, World's Greatest Referee. So I'm going to fire some names from across the decades when it comes to professional wrestling referees, and you're going to whittle it down. You've got to eliminate them. We'll come to that in a little bit. But
that's all right, hey, I'm not going to cut them no slack.
No, no, no. You put the boots to them the entire time. It's all about you and what you think at the moment. Just rattle them off. We love it.
Yeah.
As we say on the Meltdown, no days off, right, Brian? No days off.
Hey, there's booking ain't easy, baby. Hey, Earl, you mentioned earlier about when the Hogan spot where he pressed you and dumped you way beyond where you were supposed to go. It just made me think about ref bumps. And, you know, like you said, that one required surgery from Dr. Andrews down in Birmingham, which is who's world famous. I mean, he worked on so many of the boys. I guess one of the questions besides that shoulder injury, any other major injuries from a bad bump that you have taken in your career?
Well, Triple H hit me with a sledgehammer in this shoulder, the right shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Had to go have surgery done on that. Both of them cracked like cereal, crack, snap, crackle, and pop, especially in the wintertime.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I've had a lot of injuries, you know, but it happens.
Yeah.
Part of what we sign up for, right?
Yep. We didn't sign up for ballet.
Right. Yeah, it may look like it at times, but it's not, as you know. One question I wanted to ask you, Earl. I noticed that when you are, and every referee is different, but you hit the count so hard. Do you ever have any wrist issues, or do you have a wrist injury from all those false counts where you're sliding everywhere, making the 1-2 and the kick out, the 1-2? Any issues from that in the wrist area?
A little bit.
Okay.
I have more trouble with my knees because up and down and things, yep. You know, now even today, you know, I just had a new knee replacement. I had two of them. The first one I had, he put a half one in and it came loose. So I had to go back and to have it done all over again, and he put in a whole one. And this one was done back in May. So mm-hmm. I'm still having little problems getting around, like I want to get around, but it's, he keeps saying it just takes time to get well. But you figure 40-some years up and down on those knees, I think I wore my knees out before I wore my wrists out.
Wow. Yeah, because you would slide. Your placement was always on point. I mean, you would slide and make the 1-2 count or 1-2-3, whatever the finish is. But yeah, you were everywhere, and like I said, always on point. So I can understand.
Fans, we got to see that. You were all over the screen all the time, and you made it so amazing for us. So thank you so much from the fans to Earl Hebner. Thank you. Now speaking of the fans, there's been some times that the fans have jumped that rail and have slid into the ring and fell into a spot where they might not have wanted to be. Let's have a little chat about fans jumping the rail, Earl. What are the differences between how it was handled in the 80s and 90s and how it might be handled nowadays? What was the usual protocol?
Well, back in the Crockett days, if a fan come across, got in the ring, they beat the hell out of them. That was it back then. Now it's a little bit lenient because, you know, now we got the big barricades and we have more security at the shows and this, that, and the other. And I hate to bring this up, but it's kind of funny. But it's been years ago, but I think it's funny that I only thought of it when you just said something about it.
Let's hear it.
The Montreal Screwjob.
Uh-oh.
When I went back to do the next TV, the fans jumped the ring and came in the ring, and I was putting boots to them, like knee drops to them, and I grabbed one guy and got me come up to help me, and you're not gonna believe this. And I grabbed him around the neck and had the chokehold on him. And they were screaming, Earl, let him go, let him go. It was a security guy.
Oh, that's great.
And he was security. He came in to help me. And I turned around and grabbed him. I mean, hell, I didn't know, you know. And they're screaming, Earl, let him go, let him go. I had him, man, And it was, and the only reason I thought of that is because of what you just told me, Tom. But when you're in that predicament, and that situation, you got to defend for yourself.
Yeah.
Now I went back for Slammiversary for TNA last year, and we were in Montreal, and a few people knew I was coming. A little bit of it got out, but a lot of them didn't know. And I walked out to do the match, and man, it was bad business right then. Then we did about the same finish that we did in Montreal for Brett. I went up there, and y'all might have seen it, I don't know. But anyway, I refused to ring the bell. The guy comes up, we blah, 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 blah. Anyway, end up putting the baby face over. I got yays and hays coming out. I'll say 80% of it. It's still, I can't trust Canadians. It's a certain amount that's going to be not be my friend. But I did get a lot of cheers coming out.
Love that. I'm going to send that to PCO. Just that little clip there. You can't trust Canadians.
I can't.
Hey, Earl, did you ever have any, like going into, for example, Montreal or anywhere around the world, hell, it could be Poughkeepsie or White Plains. Did you ever have any pre-match rituals or anything that you just did sort of a routine before going out? Do you ever have anything?
You mean to the crowd?
No, just for yourself. Is there anything that, like a ritual? Is there anything that you always did prior to going out on the show?
Brian wants to know how many shots of Jack you did before you went out to the show.
I know that's not the case, but yeah.
No, but at times, I mean, house shows, I would just love to go out because when I had... Because truthfully, and to be honest with you, I love the heat that I got. I always have, you know, and I still love it. But I was always so excited to get out there and hear them start giving me bullshit.
Yeah.
You know? I just loved it. And I'd milk it with them. You know, I'd go for it. I'd work them. And that's what made it probably pretty good for me through my career. If they knew I was... a bad guy regardless. And they knew what I wanted. They knew what I was going to do, what I wanted to do. And truthfully, I don't know how I lasted this long without getting fired, doing the shit that I did do. What I did, you know?
Well, it was working. It worked for 40 plus years, amazing career. Yeah, you did it right. No doubt about it.
But I was babyface too at times. Yeah. You know what I mean? It worked.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely worked. I mean, I'm thinking about it right now. You were in a spot in the late 90s that was completely unimaginable to even think about how much people would pay for that spot. How many beers did you have with Steve Austin on shows? It must be in the thousands, right? It was an every night occurrence in the late 90s.
You know what? That's why I always took his match. I knew I could get half lit at the show and then not spend as much at the bar.
Always working. We love that. Well, let's talk about referee protocols. So obviously it's a show. So we need to make sure that everything is kept to time and everything happens for a reason. But when it comes to being that third man in the ring, what is the protocol if, for example, somebody doesn't kick out when they are meant to kick out on a spot or someone's running is late? As an official, how do you operate when that happens?
Well, truthfully, I've had guys try me before and I have counted.
Okay.
Okay. They want, it's called ha ha. You want to play ha 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 with you. I was in a match with the Road Warriors, Tatanka, and I cannot think of else who was with him. And they kept messing with me. And I kept giving them a TV show. And I go, go home, go home, go home. They wouldn't go home. So I stepped in front of the, I think one of the road boys took a bump, rung the bell, DQ. He goes, what are you doing? That's not the finish. I said, it's the finish for the night, because I told you, damn it, to go home, and you wouldn't. So I get out of the ring. I go back to the dressing room. Pat Patterson goes, Hebner, you got to go back. You got to go back. I said, I'm not going back. Yes, we can edit it. You got to go back. He said, you're the referee at the beginning. You got to go. I said, well, you tell them they better go home when I tell them then, because if they're not, it's going to happen. The same thing's going to happen. So that was one of them. But, you know, some guys will play you and see what they can do. And a lot of times when I know it's a close call, I'll holler kick, kick, kick when I'm down counting. Because if I see it's going to be slow, I'll holler kick, kick, kick. Because I'm not going to stop. If I'm coming down, I'm going to go with it. And if you're going to play me, I'm coming down. And that's just the way I was. Now, when I first started, I'd cater to them. But after a while, you figure out who wants to work you and bullshit you. And then you've been there as long as I have. Then you start bullshitting them back.
What was the cat's line, Brian? You screw around and you'll find out. That's what happens. That's what happens.
Don't hey, Brian knows. Brian knows what the boys on.
Hey, yeah. When he was in charge, I did not mess around with the Earl. There was no doubt. It was all business when I was. I'm thinking. I'm stay focused. I don't have time to screw around. You know. So yeah.
So the spot where a wrestler pushes the referee and the referee does a hot comeback and pushes the wrestler up, that's a shoot, right? That is going right over.
I watched that last night also, and the spot with you and Triple H, you know, he pushes you, you push him back and forth. Man, what a pop that got. Big time. Oh, yeah. Speaking of big pops, let me ask you this. You and I and all – almost everyone in the business that are around for the big shows, the SummerSlam, Survivor Series, WrestleMania, the big ones. Usually, a lot of times, we would have celebrities come in and work the shows. Were there any celebrities that impressed you with, you know, just the way they interacted with the boys and being around the business? Any celebrities throughout your career that you thought, wow, this person gets it. They understand the business?
Well, the one I can think of there is Pete Rose.
Pete, okay.
Yeah, most of them were pretty good. You know what I'm saying? It's a few that I think it was a few that really didn't was just there, you know.
Just for the payday and not really wanting to understand the business, and you know.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it was the Jeff Jarrett line that really holds it in place for a lot of people, in that wrestling is a beautiful medium that some people, no explanation is necessary. You get it, you love it, you embrace it, and everything it's worth. And for other people, no explanation will ever be enough. So you either get it or you don't get it.
You don't. I think
it's whatever side of the fence that you particularly fall on. Now, as we come to different sides of the fence, professional wrestling has so many wonderful cult names that have been associated with it over the past however many years. There has been, it's endless, it's timeless. Well, my son Charlie listens to so many wonderful wrestling podcasts and stories, and he was listening to one of our favorite icons, in that of the Louisville Slugger, Mr. Jim Cornette. And they were telling him, look at that smile on Earl's face right now, because he knows where we're going. Earl, do you remember a time in the late 90s where it was, I think it was the Barriquas and the DOA, and they were having a brawl outside the building, and they smashed up a car that just happened to belong to a certain Mr. Jim Cornette? Do you remember this?
I love it. Yep. Hey, it just happens to be that when all that happened, in fact, it was Trump Plaza.
Okay.
And we'll sit there watching the monitor, right? And the ref, you know, they stick close to the gorilla position. And Cornette was there, and he's sitting there watching it. And all of a sudden, he sees his car. And brother, he goes crazy. He jumps up, goes out there, unlocks the trunk, gets a baseball bat, and beats the hell out of it. And then there's a big laugh that we're laughing now. And it's his own car. Yeah.
Entertainment. There you go.
But you know what? He's a character, and I love him to death. I really do. He is one of my favorites. It's been always in my life in this business, because we were all at NWA years ago when we first started. And brother, I've seen him whack people with that damn tennis racket that should have killed him, but they didn't. And I don't know how in the world he didn't go to prison for it. But, he will shoot on a mark in a minute. Believe me, I've seen it. But that's Jim. But I love him. He's truthful. He's straight up. He doesn't cut no corners. He just tells it. He tells it like it is. If you have a good match, he tells you you had a good match, then you had a good match. But if you didn't have a good match, he's not going to tell you it's a good match. He's going to tell you what he thinks, because he's not going to tell you if you didn't do something good that you think it's good, because it's only going to make you worse. And that's how he was. He holds no punches, and I love him.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always enjoyed Jim and being around him. I was lucky enough to work with him in Smoky Mountain Wrestling. And he was the guy that really gave me my first break in the business, as far as going from the indies and working around and then actually getting that shot in Smoky Mountain. And I ended up staying there for, you know, a good year or so, but learned a ton from Jim, and always very helpful, and nothing but good, positive things from him.
Right.
Yeah. So Earl, did you watch, or do you watch, like, for example, this past weekend, the Saturday Night Main Event? Did you see that show?
No, yeah. I hardly watch any of it anymore.
Yeah. Well, there's so much to consume. I understand. We're sort of the same way. Tom and I are sort of bouncing off our notes, because there's just so much out there. But this past weekend was a big weekend in Atlanta, Goldberg's retirement, and they really go retro as far as the throwbacks with everything, including the referee. Remember the light blue, for example, the shirts that you and your brother would wear, the light blue with the bow tie.
Right.
Okay. So they're back to that on the Saturday Night Main Event. And of course, then they had the originals like Tomcat is wearing there. Did you have a preference of those shirts? I know this is a crazy question. It's just something I wanted to know what you thought. Did you have a preference of which one?
I didn't mind either shirt, but the only thing I hated is that I hated a long sleeve blue shirt. Ooh. It was just, and if you go back and look at some of my old films, I had short sleeve shirts because started wearing short, and I asked them, could I do it? Because it was just, I don't know, just something about the long sleeve shirt just bothered the hell out of me, you know.
I can see that, as far as you being able to move around, jump, make the counts. I could see why it would be in the way. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So and your favorite shirt to wear is the classic that I see on the screen right there. Where can people get that? Is that a Pro Wrestling Tees shirt there?
No, these are my own shirts that I have made up.
Well, we need to find out a way once we wrap up the show. We're going to have to put that somewhere in our information, so that if you have some extras and you want fans to get that, I think that's a great shirt. So,
yeah, let's get some dollar in there. Let's get there, that cash registered, ka-chinging. Beautiful. There is so much that we can talk about with you, and we started off the show like that this could be a full-on series. So we're gonna bounce around a little bit, just like arms in a referee shirt. I'm gonna just honor you so much, because Brian, we are sat with a TNA Hall of Famer today. We love it. Can we have a round of applause for that? Woof, woof, woof. Beautiful. Now, one question that I did want to ask you is you are in the illustrious TNA Hall of Fame. There has only been one referee that's actually been inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, and that was as a Warrior Recipient Award winner, and that was Timmy White. What do you think of the way that's handled by WWE, in that they've not actually honored any other referees in their Hall of Fame?
Well, you really want to know how I feel?
I do.
This is the truth. They should have done Tim White way before now. They should have done it for him when he was living. It didn't do him any good now. Not him himself in person.
Yep.
But why didn't they do that way before now? And he did well deserved it. I mean, he spent half his life with Andre, making babysitting or taking care of him. And he was really important to that company, you know? And, you know, he ended up hurting his shoulder and where he could never referee again in the hell cell. And, you know, I think it's bad when they put somebody that's passed away into the Hall of Fame. If I ever go in there, I want to be alive. If I'm not, I don't want to ever go. And that's in any of them, you know? Well, good, it doesn't do me any good. I just think it's bad. Even the talent. If you look back, some of the talent that they put in here lately have passed away.
Yeah.
So why do it? You know, what does it mean now? Other than their Hall of Fame. They can't walk around and be proud of it or go to autograph sessions and Hall of Famer here, there. It's to me, it's no good. I'm just telling how I feel. And another thing I feel like, which may not get over very well. I don't think any celebrity that's been in WrestleMania or anything should be in the Hall of Fame. They never bumped like you guys. They never earned their rights to be there. I mean, do you see any, how many Hall of Fames do you see in the baseball or football that it hadn't been players or coaches?
Yeah.
Why did they deserve to be there? And you have referees that can't even get in there. Or you have great talent that's unrecognized and can't get in there. But you have a bunch of jabroni celebrities in there. That's my feelings. I can't help it.
No, yeah, I agree. I think you're on point with that. I mean, for example, Sid was just inducted. And, you know, he recently passed away. And, yeah,
there's so many. Like the British Bulldog. I mean, we endorsed him with Harry a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
So much so that it was just so unbelievable that they didn't induct him for so long,
right,
to the point where he was no longer with us. So yeah, it's sad.
I mean, it's bad that I have to say that, but if you
it's the truth. It's true though. I think about Demolition's another team that should be in there and right. Still haven't got the call. So hopefully soon. I know that they're good friends of ours and great guys, and just hope that it happens for them soon.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we always like to keep it positive. Let's keep it positive. Let's keep it smiling. Let's take a swing for the working man and do it right. There you go.
All right, we'll cheer one up. Let's go.
Right, let's cheer it up. I'm going to cheer you guys up because it's time.
Let's do it.
It's time to embrace the quiz show aspects of our game. So yes. We are going to hit our Mount Rushmores right now. And for this game, I'm going to invite Earl to give us his Mount Rushmore of matches that he has personally been a part of. So just like the WWE have done recently in their Hall of Fame when it comes to iconic moments, we are going to pass that over to Earl. Let us know your top four that would be on a Mount Rushmore of Earl's favorites. And then I'm going to come to Brian, and I'm going to see, before Brian announces his, how many you both line up together. Earl Hebner, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Let's go, brother. I'm ready to jot them down.
Okay. One of them right off the bat.
Yeah.
It was Tully Blanchard, the Magnum TA.
Yeah.
Years ago, the I Quit match. When J.J. Dillon threw the tail in.
Classic.
Okay.
Iconic. Yes. He's not, I mean, you look at I Quit matches today, there are very few that can match up to that.
I refereed Ricky Morton and Ric Flair in St. Louis, Missouri. Oh,
wow.
Two out of three falls. And the reason that's funny to, well, it wasn't funny then, but it was funny now. I screwed the finish up on one of the false finishes. I mean, one of the two out of three falls.
Right. And
I don't know how I did it. And I went after that. I went over to the corner and said, I'm going, Rick, I am so sorry. I screwed it up. He says, don't worry about it. Just listen to me. We'll get it. And that's something I'll never forget because that was two out of three falls for the world championship. And wow. I think that was probably my first championship match ever, I think.
Wow.
I've had so many, but not bragging that. But just being young then, you know. But I'll never forget that as long as I live. But he coached me through it. Both of them did. Him and Ricky both. It was awesome.
Were they both covered in blood?
Yeah. Yes.
I thought so. Okay. Okay, that's two.
Okay, good.
Stone Cold and The Rock in California.
Stone Cold and The Rock. So this one was California. Was I'm trying to think. Was this a Mania?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
That's down. Love it. So we've hit four. I don't know how you're gonna top that last one. Let's go. Let's see what number four is.
I should have saved that for last.
You should have, yeah. Let's build it.
Because that was my big celebration.
Oh,
but anyway.
The beer shot.
Okay. Now, one of the matches that I won't forget either was Hogan and Ultimate Warrior in Toronto.
Wow.
And the reason I won't forget that is because the Warrior hit me so hard with that clothesline. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I got up. I mean, brother, he full boarded me. It was horrible.
Was that a regular occurrence with the Warrior? It was it just running a million miles an hour?
Every day. Whether it was a house show or whether it was a TV show or whether it was a WrestleMania, his hits were all the same. Nothing changed.
Wow. Didn't improve, just kept laying them in, huh?
Right, right.
Wow.
Right. He had two important things. His entrance and shaking the ropes. After that, the party's over.
Party's over.
Good stuff.
My goodness, that is good stuff. Oh, Brian, what a foursome, hey? Well, let me have a look at it. So, okay, I got Tully Blanchard and Magnum TA, I Quit. Ricky Morton and Ric Flair, two out of three in St. Louis. We've got Stone Cold and The Rock, and we've got Hogan Warrior. I am saying you've got... One the same. Let's find out if I'm right.
All right. This is more difficult than anyone. This is our 15th episode. And through these episodes, we pose this same question to everyone. But with Earl, with a 40-year career, it's going to be tough to match.
Yeah.
So through my research this week, here's what I'm going with. The one that caused the shoulder injury that we mentioned earlier, Andre and Hogan main event 1988.
Yeah.
Such a great build up to that.
Great build.
And they didn't break Earl's fall once he got launched, probably 15 feet at least. So that would be one for me.
Never seen a referee grow wings. It was like that spot.
Yeah. We'll have to put that up in when we edit because that was a great, great visual. And Earl sold it like $1 million. So. The second one I came up with was Randy Savage, Ted DiBiase, WrestleMania, Trump Plaza. Atlantic City. That was my second. My third on my Mount Rushmore would be Rock versus Shane on SmackDown 2000. And that's where Earl slammed the cage door on Triple H as Rock came over the top of the cage. So, such realism there. You look like you went full speed slamming that cage door. And also on the outro and the exit of that is a great shot of you standing on the ramp. So that was a great visual. And my fourth, Triple H versus Jericho, also in 2000. Jericho wins the title. And this is where Earl and Triple H go back and forth with the big shoves. Yeah, that was classic. And you made them agree to never put a hand on you as long as your career lasted. So that was
right.
Never lay a hand on a referee, which being you, of course. So that's my four. There you go.
It goes deep with them. Wow, the research on that, Brian. I'm looking at that. I'm staring at the ceiling again. I've got pin me, pay me. I'm part of the job squad right now. I've lost 2 weeks on the bounce.
I knew this would be tough because his career, think about it. It's not like he's just going and refereeing one match per show. Sometimes he has four, five, six, seven, however long the day is. You know what I mean? So there's such a library of his work. So it's hard to pick four.
Really? Yeah. It must be.
You know what? I could give you 144 if I could just think of them. But what some of them that both of y'all have just come up with is unreal that it didn't dawn on me. I was just, Of course, it's easy to remember Stone Cold because, hell, you can't forget drinking.
Earl's still drunk now. It finished in the 90s. I love it. Oh, what an eight set that is. That's brilliant. That Triple H Jericho one, that sticks out to me.
Yep.
That was massive. I was sort of late teens at that particular time, and that was huge. So much so, they actually put that in a video game, so you can replay that particular spot as you... in a video game. We love it. Right, well, keeping on with the game show aspect, I applaud you both for an incredible lineup. We're going to come to the spot that we talked about a little bit earlier on. This is winner stays on the ultimate referee. So, let me lay this out for you, Will. I have two hands. I'm going to give you a name in one hand and a name in the other hand. They are all going to be referees. You're going to keep one and you are going to drop one. The one you keep goes on to the next round and I'll give you another name. At the end of the list, we're going to find out who has their hand raised high as the ref has counted three. Mr. Earl Hebner, are you ready to play?
I'm ready.
Now, Brian, that name that we talked about a little bit earlier on, I'm going to drop it down the list a little bit more because we're probably going to have an Otto Vons. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We're going to start out with Lil Nate, Charles Robinson, or Mike Chioda.
It's not going to be easy, so yeah.
It's like I've stabbed him in the heart already.
Hopefully, I'll have to go with Lil Nate.
We're going to keep with Charles, and Mike takes the three. Charles Robinson or Dave Hebner?
Well, you're making it tough.
Oh, yeah.
I have to go with Dave.
The Nate goes down. Dave or Jack Doan?
Dave.
Keep with Dave. Dave or Nick Patrick?
Oh.
It's getting good.
It's kind of tough when family's involved in this stuff.
Tell me about it. I'm looking at you and your mouth is going up at the corners because you're thinking, I'm going to drop him in a minute.
You know, I have to go with Nick Patrick.
So long, big man. Nick Patrick stays on. Nick Patrick or Jimmy Corderas?
I'll have to go with Nick Patrick.
Nick's staying on. Jody Hamilton will be proud.
Nick Patrick. The assassin is watching. Yes.
Nick Patrick or Joey Morella?
Yeah, this is really, really tough. I'll have to stick with Nick.
We're going to stick with Nick. We are saluting Joey. Nick or AEW's Aubrey Edwards?
Nick.
Keeping with Nick. Quote. Nick or Brian Hebner?
Damn.
We told you this would be. We told you this would be tough.
How many times have we gone? We're not finished.
We're not. Yeah.
Nick or Brian? We're gonna. Are we gonna send this to Brian?
Can't have a Broadway.
Nick or John Cone?
Nick
or Teddy Long?
Damn. Man, y'all guys are killing me.
Oh, yeah.
I have to go with Nick.
Keeping with Nick. Bye-bye, player. Nick or Tommy Young?
Oh, my God. I have to go with Tommy Young.
Yeah, Tommy, he's a legend, is he?
Because I'll tell you, he was the greatest of all.
Well, let's see if he gets to the end.
Including myself. And I'll put Tommy over me any day of the week.
Well, that was going to be the last one. Tommy Young or Earl Hebner?
Tommy Young.
Tommy Young! We like it. Yes, we have.
Hey, I can't be better than my teacher.
So is it the old adage that he taught you everything that you know, but he didn't teach you everything that he knows?
No.
Great playing. We love that.
Yeah.
Tommy Young.
Good job, man.
He's over like Rover. That's awesome. That's so awesome. Thank you for playing. Well, we are going to be welcoming Earl back over to the UK in 2026 as he joins us for his second, his two-time appearance for the Love of Wrestling in Manchester. We want you guys to log on to fortheloveofwrestling.co.uk, get your tickets in to see the greatest referee of all time and have your hand raised in the ring. We have got visitors jetting in from the four corners of the world. Earl, did you have fun last time you were with us?
I loved it. And you, believe me, I think this will be my last Manchester trip over the UK. So if you want to see me, come see me this time, because I don't think it'll be a next time. But you never know. But my plans are this will be my last international tour.
Well, with a tear in my eye to hear that, now's your chance. Get your tickets in. Come over and see us for the Love of Wrestling and meet up with the world's greatest referee. Earl, you're an absolute star. Thank you so, so much for spending this Meltdown Monday with Brian and I.
Thank you so much. And remember, I didn't say I wouldn't come back to you guys. I think you two, after all the questions and talking, I think this is between you two guys, it's the toughest match I've ever had in my life.
We told you it was going to be tough. You're always going to go over in our eyes, you know that. But Earl, I just want to thank you for joining us today here on the Meltdown, episode 15. And you taking the time out to talk to our viewers and share the wisdom of a true icon. So just so you know, my friend, you are always welcome here. We wish you the best, and I hope to see you soon, my friend.
Thank you. Thank both you and Tom for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is the world's greatest referee. Wherever you are in the world, put your hands together and count. 1, 2, 3. He's Earl Hebner! He is the TNA Hall of Famer, and we cannot wait to welcome him back over to our shores here in the UK. So once again, please go out of your way to come and check us out at For the Love of Wrestling in Manchester in February 2026. Now, before we put a nice big bow here on episode number 15 of The Meltdown, if you forget what number it is, it's a 10 count. and 5 to get up. There you go. That's how you remember it when we talk about referees. I'm going to delve into the Meltdown mailbag and pose some beautiful questions from you guys, our Meltdown listeners, to the creation of Devastation himself. Now, these two, we've got one from Essex, England, and we've got one from Denton, Texas today, Brian. Oh,
Texas. So, okay.
I'm going to start in Texas.
All right, let's do it.
Our first question comes from William Ballard in Denton, Texas, and he asks, in your opinion, who should have been a world champion but was never given the opportunity to run with the ball?
Wow. William, thank you, from Denton, Texas. Hey, great question. Well, we just got finished with this interview with Earl, and some of my Mount Rushmores went back into the 80s. So a couple of people, there are so many. There's not just one. There's dozens. But right away, I would think of two people, at least going from the 80s and moving into the 90s. I will go with Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff.
Bounce up.
Ravishing Rick Rude. There's two right there. There's a lot more, but there's two.
Definitely well-deserving. They should have been top of the mountain.
Yes.
But the talent pool was so big. Oh. In the 80s and 90s, that you didn't need to be world champion to be top of that list, but they certainly could have been world champion in any territory, and they could have held the NWA or the WWE championship. Mr. Wonderful, Ravishing Rick Rude, my own personal favorite, Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, definitely.
Yeah, perfect. There you go.
There we go. Literally perfect.
Yes.
Thanks so much for the question there, William. That's brilliant. And we are sending our love out to Denton, Texas. Yeehaw! Let's carry on from that and over to Essex, England. So I'm going to dust off my white stilettos and see what comes down the pike here. Olivia Heathers from Essex, England asks you, what is your impression of WrestleMania and now SummerSlam being 2-day events?
Well, thank you, Olivia. Great question. The way I see it, and probably the higher ups maybe obviously seeing this, is that I think as long as revenue is up and attendance is up and there's no changing in that, the way the format, because they're selling out everywhere they go, and until that really, really drops, the bottom drops on that, if it will, it may. It always has in the past. But if it does drop down, then I can see them going back to the 1-day event. But for now, while it's hot, it's red hot, go for it.
There doesn't seem to be any kind of glass ceiling right now. They are absolutely milking it for everything that it's worth, and good on them for doing so. Well, speaking of attendance for SummerSlam, that brings us really nicely to our SummerSlam giveaway here on the Meltdown. We need to hear from you guys, because we're going to give you the chance to win a prize bundle courtesy of the man himself. The creation of Devastation is going to send you a prize package straight out of the bomb shelter, and it's going to be full of goodies that you want in your collection. Yes, the way that you go about being in with a chance of winning it is, all you need to do is tell us what your combined attendance guess will be for the 2 days of SummerSlam. We need to know what you guys are going to think of day one and day two, put together a combined attendance, because no doubt they're going to announce it on day two. They're going to be flying that flag high as they can be. Yes, that stadium is going to be lit. So tell us, how many people over the 2 days do you think are going to be in attendance at SummerSlam? The person who is nearest to the pin is going to win a beautiful prize bundle. And what a way to carry on your summer, Brian. Nice little prize package, yeah?
I'm happy to do it. I have some new merchandise this year that you guys are going to love. And it's not going to cost you a dime. All you have to do is enter. Give us your attendance guess for both days, and I will ship it to you anywhere in the world. All courtesy of yours truly. Signed, sealed, delivered. That's what we do here.
That's right. Just like a Stevie Wonder song, we are signed, sealed, delivered. We are yours. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps everything up for episode number 15. We have got some big, big guests coming in the coming weeks, and we are going to keep it under wraps. We don't want any of our competition to find out who we're going to drop the bomb on with you guys. It's going to be awesome. So from here in trickly Manchester, UK. I am always your Tomcat. I am your three-time host of the year, and we are going to move from strength to strength. This show is going on for you. Hit us up on our Instagram posts. You can follow him at BrianClark3XChamp. You can follow me at Tom Finkill, or follow our joint channel at the Meltdown Official on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on X. You can find Brian on TikTok. He's always yeeting it up in there. And obviously, we want you guys to subscribe and click that notification bell on YouTube. From us here in Manchester, Brian, I'm sending all the love over to AZ, brother. We'll see you next time. Same Meltdown time, same Meltdown channel. Boom.
Thank you, Tomcat. I appreciate that. I know the listeners of the Meltdown appreciate that. Another great episode. Earl Hebner was, as advertised, just a deep dive with him, and we had a blast. And I'm sure we're going to have him on a future show. He will be going over to UK next year and having probably spend some time with Tom, of course. So, again, thank you all for watching. We appreciate you so much. Make sure you subscribe, like, and check us out here on The Meltdown, where we are always breaking necks and cashing checks.
A boom!